Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Recycle by Eurosport, a retrospective series on the most compelling, the most controversial, and the most extraordinary riders and races in cycling history. Written by Felix Lowe and narrated by me, Graham Wilgos. Last time out, we travel back to 1919, the year that Eugène Christophe won the Tour's first yellow jersey. He was teased by fans for it. They called him Christophe the Canary, and despite being the race's first leader in yellow, he would never win the Tour. In this edition of Recycle, we look back at a man who has won five, and the year the greatest road cyclist of all time, Eddie Merckx, broke rival Luis Acaña by almost winning two stages in one day during the 1972 Tour de France. Eddie Merckx's 1972 campaign was named by Peloton magazine as the greatest season ever. That year, the Belgian legend helped himself to three monument wins, a second Giro Tour double, and the hour record. But one man stood between the cannibal and his fourth Tour win, Spaniard Luis Acaña. The 1972 Tour was decided in Provence and the Alps with six successive stages on the high stuff, kicking off with an ascent of Mont Ventoux on stage 11. Most intriguing, though, was stage 14. A split stage on Monday the 17th of July, which began with a 51-kilometre ride from Briançon to Valois and was followed by the 151-kilometre schlep that same afternoon to Aix-les-Bains. Stage 14A was essentially a long ride up the Lautaret and the south side of the Glibier ahead of the fast ascent to Valois. Let's set the scene. A year earlier, Merckx would probably not have won his third Tour had his big rival, Acaña, not crashed out of the race. The Belgian was more than 8 minutes down on Acaña, entering the 14th stage when they both crashed hard on the descent of the Col de Mente. While Merckx remounted, Acaña suffered a bad shoulder injury after Dutchman Joop Zoetemelk ploughed into him at high speed while grappling with a puncture. With Acaña forced out and Merckx effectively guaranteed the Tour, it was later dubbed the most famous fall in Tour de France history by author Christopher S. Thompson. Acaña's subsequent comments about Merckx being an undeserving winner that year did not go down well at Chez Eddy. The feud boiled over into the 1972 season and Paris-Nice, where a nasty crash in a bunch sprint on one of the early stages resulted in a broken vertebra for Merckx. It would count among the worst injuries of his career. Acaña ramped up the mind games by stressing that there was nothing wrong with Merckx, while Merckx's doctor advised the reigning world champion to quit, saying, "It's as if you've fallen from the third floor of a house." Barely able to ride out of the saddle, Merckx still, amazingly, finished Paris-Nice second overall and won San Remo just 3 days later. After a fruitless cobbles campaign, Merckx did the Liège-Flèche double, then went on to win four stages of the Giro en route to a third Maglia Rossa. The Tifosi were so impressed that many of them knelt down on the side of the road as he passed, and the race organisers reportedly insured Merckx for 40 million Belgian francs for the flight back from Sicily to the mainland. And so, on to the 1972 Tour for his renewed rivalry with Acaña. In the Pyrenees, the Spaniard put down an early marker with an attack on the Obisque, which Merckx covered before Acaña punctured on the Salour. The Belgian attacked, and Acaña crashed while chasing back, accentuating the bad blood between the two riders. Merckx took the upper hand at Luchon and then sandbagged Acaña on Ventoux, leading the Spaniard to lament that he and his team were being treated like lepers. The scene was set for the Alps, which Merckx entered in yellow with a 2-minute 39-second advantage over Frenchman Cyril Guimard and 2 minutes 56 seconds over Ocaña. The first classic stage in the Alps spirited the riders from Ossières to Briançon via the Col de Var and Col d'Azur. Merckx's Maltini team set a fierce pace that eliminated all but 16 riders on the Var, and with Ocaña pedalling through Paella, the Belgian had ridden clear near the summit before being caught by Guimard on the descent. But on the Azur, Merckx soloed clear to take victory in Briançon. Ocaña rallied to limit his losses on the day to 1 minute and 41 seconds ahead of the brutal split stage a day later, which he would start trailing his big rival by almost 5 minutes on GC. 47 years on, both the Var and the Azur featured in stage 18 of the 106th edition of the Tour, coming before an ascent of the Galibier via the Col de Lautery. The 208-kilometre stage saw the riders rise above 2,000 metres on no less than 3 occasions and finish with a breakaway win for Nairo Quintana in Valois, courtesy of his attack on the Galibier. With Egan Bernal also moving into second overall, it wasn't a bad day for Colombia. For Merckx and the 1972 peloton, however, the Galibier was reserved until the next morning and stage 14A. It was the 37th time that the Tour had tackled the mountain since its introduction by Henri de Grange in 1911, when Émile Georget crested in pole position. A year later, Eugène Christophe, the first man to don the Tour's yellow jersey, went over the top first before declaring, "It's not sport anymore. It's not racing. This is just hard labour." There were calls for the mountain to be scrapped from the Tour route, but de Grange was having none of it. According to the author Daniel Freib in Mountain High, "Nothing could persuade de Grange that the Galibier wasn't the jewel in his and the Tour's crown. He was besotted, calling the inclusion of the Galibier his act of adoration towards the Tour. O Sapé, O Laffray, O Colbéard, O Tourmalet," he wrote in Lotto, itemising climbs that now shrunk by comparison with his new talisman. "I will not shirk from my duty in proclaiming that compared to the Galibier, you are no more than pale and vulgar babies. Faced with this giant, we can do no more than tip our hats and bow." A large monument to the Tour's founder, built at the summit in 1949, 9 years after his death, is dedicated to the glory of Henri de Grange, 1865 to 1940, former director of the newspaper Lotto, founder of the cyclists' Tour de France. Until 1976, riders passed over the summit at 2,556 metres through a 365 metre tunnel below the ridgeline. But when this was closed for safety reasons, a further torturous kilometre was tacked on to the existing road as a deviation, taking the riders up to 2,642 metres. Both the 1972 and 2019 editions took the peloton on the south approach via Briançon. Freib says the south-north route from the Lautery is less famous, but equally awe-inspiring. Steadier in its upper portion, with just an even final kilometre above the tunnel through the summit. Towards the top, in particular, the giant rocky wedge of the 3,228-metre Grand Galibier commands the view. The Galibier's inclusion in 1972's Stage 14A is perhaps just one of the reasons Patrick Brady from Peloton magazine called the split stage text message breakup cruel. The first half consisted of 34 uphill kilometres up the Lautery and Galibier before a fast 17-kilometre descent to the finish. Guimard won the sprint at Menetier-les-Bains after 13 kilometres before Maltini whittled down the pack on the Lautery, but it was the Dutchman Zoetemelk who then rode clear to summit the Galibier in pole position. Zoetemelk led Frenchman Raymond de Lille by 5 seconds, with Portugal's Joaquim Agostinho and Dutchman Edward Janssens at 15 seconds, and Merckx riding more than 5 seconds behind, alongside his Belgian teammate, Jos Deschenmaker. Poor Ocaña was pedalling squares, 2 minutes adrift, suffering with a cold he'd picked up in the Pyrenees. Merckx, Agostinho and Janssens caught and passed de Lille on the descent before Merckx rode clear like a demon to join forces with Zoetemelk, 5 kilometres from the finish. According to the French journalist Pierre Douglas, Merckx was riding like a man possessed on the descent of the Galibier. "I was on the back of the motorcycle. The speedometer read 100 kilometres per hour. Eddie overtook us. I thought I was seeing things. At the finish, he said to me, 'I could have gone quicker, you know. I was spinning. I needed another gear.'" At the finish in Valois, Zoetemelk launched the sprint early to open up a small gap over Merckx, who fought back to win by a bike length. It was the Cannibal's fifth victory of the race, wrapped up before lunchtime. Guimard came home at 54 seconds, Polidor at 1 minute 34, and Ocaña, his tour dream in tatters, at 2 minutes and 11. The immediate aftermath was taken up with the small matter of Stage 14B, a 151-kilometre ride that took the peloton immediately up the Telegraph, and then the Col du Grand Coucheron and Col du Granier, ahead of the finish in Aix-les-Bains. There was little action 5 kilometres from the summit of the final climb, where Merckx pulled clear with Guimard, Zoetemelk, Lucien van Impe, Felice Jumondi, and a few others, but not, noticeably, Ocaña. When the leaders contested the sprint, it was Guimard who pipped Merckx by a tyre width to extend his lead in the green jersey standings and deny the Belgian his second win in the space of a few hours, and his third in quick succession. A day later, Merckx and Guimard would renew their sprint rivalry atop Mont Revard, in what resulted in one of the few embarrassing moments of Merckx's career. Thinking he had won the uphill sprint, the Belgian lifted his arm in celebration only to allow the Frenchman to pip him to the line. Ocaña, meanwhile, had crossed the line in the second split stage 6 minutes down and coughing up blood. The cold that he'd picked up in the Pyrenees had become a lung infection. Trailing Merckx now by 12 minutes and 23 seconds in fifth place, the Spaniard reluctantly quit the tour under orders of the race doctor. It was his third DNF in 4 years. With Ocaña out, Merckx's only remaining rival for yellow came in the form of Guimard, himself 6 minutes in arrears. But the last-ditch win over Merckx at Le Revard was to prove the Frenchman's last moment of glory in the race. 2 days later, he too had to withdraw. Guimard, it turned out, had been destroying his knees, which were ravaged by tendonitis from using gears that were too big. According to Merckx's biographer, William Fotheringham, the Frenchman was taking xylocaine injections, used to numb tissue, every 2 hours merely to keep him on the road. And, after stage 17, when he was trailing Merckx by 7 minutes and 58 seconds, it all proved too much. Many fans may point at Merckx's glory and flag up that it was done in the absence of his major rivals. But, as Fotheringham points out in his book, Merckx, Half Man, Half Bike, the difficulties both Guimard and Ocaña suffered suggests they were both simply physically incapable of taking Merckx on, while Ocaña clearly could not handle it mentally. After a sixth stage win in the individual time trial to Versailles, Merckx went on to win his fourth tour by almost 11 minutes on Gimondi, securing an historic second Giro Tour double in the process. The Belgian also won the green jersey that he inherited from Guimard after the Frenchman's withdrawal. Guimard, who had won the jersey on the opening stage, was brought to the peloton to present the Maillot Vert to his rival in Paris. But the Belgian, in a show of sportsmanship, gave it back to him and said he deserved it more, a gesture that reduced Guimard to tears. Journalist Jean-Paul Olivier says Merckx's 1972 tour win was a masterpiece of clear-headed racing. And, according to Fotheringham, it was also a masterpiece of attritional racing. He gained time on Ocaña on all bar 4 of the 15 stages that the Spaniard was in the race, ensuring that the psychological pressure never let up. As it happened, July 1972 would be the final Ocaña-Merckx confrontation on the tour. The following year, with Merckx sitting out of the race, the Spaniard finally wore the yellow jersey in Paris. A rematch between the two feuding rivals never happened, and they famously made up during a spirited drinking session on a plane to Geneva just a year later. Merckx kept on winning in 1972, following up his victory in the Giro di Lombardia by smashing the hour record in Mexico. His win rate that season was 37%, with him standing on the top step of the podium in 51 of 137 races. He also finished in the top three in a staggering 57% of his races that year. It's difficult to argue with Peloton magazine's assessment of Merckx's 1972 as the greatest season ever. In the words of Patrick Brady, it was a year on which an entire career could be built. 2 Grand Tours, 3 monuments, and the hour record. Though Coppi and Anquetil could claim the Tour Giro double and both set the hour record, Merckx was the first and only rider to achieve all three in the same year. As some pointed out, after beating the entire peloton, when Merckx set out to conquer the hour record, he vanquished the one person he hadn't previously humbled, himself. And of course, it wouldn't be the last Giro Tour double of Merckx's career. The Cannibal repeated the feat for a third time in 1974, the year of his record-equalling fifth Tour triumph. While only a select few have done the Giro Tour double, Merckx is the only one to have done it on no fewer than three occasions. This has been another episode of Recycled by Eurosport, written by Felix Lowe and narrated by me, Graham Wilgos, produced by Pete Burton. You can read more from Felix on Twitter at Saddleblaze, and you can hear more from me at Graham Wilgos. Plus, you can follow Eurosport at Eurosport_UK, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Join us for our next episode when we'll tell the story of the first South American to win a Grand Tour, Colombia's Luis Lucho Herrera. We also delve into the stories of race fixing, debilitating saddle sores, and kidnapping around his 1987 Vuelta a España title. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe, share, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.